life is God's gift to you. What you do with it is your gift back to God. Well, in a world where challenges are plentiful, it's easy for us to feel discouraged. Yet with enough guidance and support, most people can achieve more in life than they ever dreamed possible. Well, beyond your fears is everything you ever dreamed of. For the Dr. Stem Show, we'll give the voiceless a voice and the hopeless hope. And now, here she is, Dr. Stem.
Today's show is about probably influence. And I have a guest who has a website that says Beautifully Taboo. So in order to start this interesting show, let me just read to you what she has on her website. She says, "Dear America, but as you know, our show goes worldwide. So I'm going to change that part and say, dear world, we have a perception problem and we need to talk. We've been asking you three important questions. Who can represent the face of giftedness? How will we know success when we see it? What is the real definition of beauty? Why are we ignoring the natural diversity right in front of us? America, which we say world, this perception we've settled for isn't working. It's time for a new reality, time to celebrate our adversity. Unapologetically ready, beautifully taboo." Welcome to the show, Miss Lacey Simmons.
Hello.
Wow. Now, Beautifully Taboo, is that your name that you give yourself, or this is the work that you do?
Well, it's more so, I guess, of a concept that we come up with. It's just a different way to kind of describe unique. And one of the things that I found for myself is that the image that I probably portray to the world, the image that people see me as, is only a small fraction of who I am as a person. Yes. And part of that is because I have a lot of those kind of taboo topics that I've never really shared with the world. And so part of what I'm hoping to do with the website and with my social media Real Talk post is to just expose the fact that you can't judge a book by its cover by any means, because we all have kind of those struggles and those adversities and those, you know, amazing moving stories of success and overcoming adversity that we can share with each other.
You know what I like about you is your authenticity, your openness, your realness. And the reason why I'm talking to you today is because we are friends on Facebook. And as I was, you know, going through some of the posts, and I don't see all the posts because I have 5,000 friends on there. So I don't get to see everybody's posts. But for some reason, those that I'm supposed to see, when I open my Facebook, whatever time I do, I get to see those. And yours was one of those about a couple of weeks ago. And it was about your real talks, that you were being open and authentic. So I'm, you know, very honored to actually have you on our show to, you know, talk about your real talks. But before we do that, because this is also talking about those people that think that there's certain people that go, you know, and become successful and be influenced to the world, and then they don't believe in other people, and we get bullied and we get talked about and put down. So I want you to tell the world who you are, where you were born, a little bit about you, so that those that don't remember you will remember and know that this is Lacey Simmons going to the world and impacting the world. So who are you?
Like you mentioned, my name is Lacey Simmons. One of the unique things about me is Lacey is actually spelled with two L's, and that's one of the stories that I share in my Real Talk series about where that originated from. But I'm originally born in Washington, D.C. I moved to Montgomery County, Maryland when I was 9 years old. So that in and of itself was a very transformative experience for me to go from a predominantly Black neighborhood and environment to one that was multiracial. And then kind of the stigmas that came with me along with that journey as well. But in the process, I'd say from that move we made in 1994 till today, I mean, I've gone to college, I've gone to graduate school. I have 3 degrees, working on my 4th degree. Most of my work experience has revolved around working with small businesses and nonprofits, but always kind of in the educational sector. I do after school, evening and weekend tutoring. I run a small tutoring company called Leading Start Kids, where I work with middle and high school, some early college level students to help them with science and math, to kind of break down those stigmas that, you know, you can do it just because you might not like math doesn't mean that you can't ever do math, and kind of helping them give them the self-confidence that they need to know that they can be successful.
So your tutoring company is called what?
Leading Start Kids.
Leading Start Kids. And you tutor?
I tutor math and science. All the levels of math and all the levels of science for middle and high school.
Okay. So that, you know, when I get into the discussion, I don't want to forget about how people can get in touch with you for tutoring. What number, email can they get in touch with?
I mean, usually the best place to probably contact me would be through Facebook, either whether it's through Beautifully Taboo or my own personal Facebook page, which would just be Lacey Simmons. I mean, I'm a millennial, so we're all on social media. So that would be the best way to probably contact me.
Awesome. So this is now the part where I wanted Lacey to come to all of you today and talk about real talk. And I'm going to, you know, cover hopefully all of them, but let me get into the one that really touched me. I'm a therapist and I've been in, you know, doing counseling for the last 20 years. And this is exactly something that we deal with and parents deal with. But then what I like about it is today we get to talk to one person that has gone through attempted suicide and also the traumas of being a child and what, you know, children are facing today. So I'm going to go, Lacey, if you don't mind, to a real talk four or five. And the real talks, when you decided to do the real talk, how did you start these and why?
Well, I have a son that's 5 years old, and it's been a very interesting journey with him. He's been tested as being gifted, and so I've come across a lot of stereotypes and stigmas that I'm facing with him being a gifted child of color. And it really caused me to reflect, just not as a parent, but just also just as a person of, in society, I feel like we often have this veil that we hide behind, especially on social media, of putting our best foot forward. We don't really share a lot of our struggles. And most of my friends on Facebook don't. You know, you get one image of who they are as a person, which is super positive, which is great. But, you know, as human beings, we've all had our struggles that have shaped us. And for me, there are a lot of secrets that I've kept from my family and from those around me that I feel like have defined me as a person. And if I want my son to be able to openly express himself, it starts with me, kind of putting that example forward and just letting go some of these burdens that I've been holding on for so long that have subconsciously prevented me from being my complete self.
Well, thank you for mentioning that, because I know a lot of people don't understand that what you see on Facebook is not always all true and real in people's lives.
Right.
That people will put a foot forward that they want you to see, but indirectly or behind the scenes, they're struggling or going through some stuff that they never get to put on Facebook or on social media for everyone to see. So that's why I like about the real talk. So the real talk for you talk about yourself as an 8-year-old and the struggle that you went through. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, probably your birth, because then I think that's another real talk that you spoke about, how you were conceived.
Right. So I am actually the product of an affair. My mother says that she was not aware that my father was actually married until after she had me. And so part of my name, which I have two L's for Lacey, is part of his name. So his name is Wallace. So she took off the WA in the beginning of his name and added a Y at the end to give me my name. So we, as a family, never really talked about the significance of that. I mean, she's mentioned it to me where my name came from. But for me, you know, as a child, it was a struggle constantly correcting people to spell it correctly. And then after a while, I started to build a sense of resentment of why am I carrying this name that literally means nothing to me? And for all of my life, and the last time I saw my father, I was 7 years old. Most of the encounters we had were at his job, which was the only place my mom was able to meet with him in public because he was married. Mm. And usually it was only when, you know, she didn't have enough money to either pay the electricity bill or maybe she didn't have enough money for food. And she would finally break down and go to his office to try to get money. And for me, it was even as a 6 and 7 year old, it was a humiliating experience to have to go there and, you know, have her literally beg for money because she couldn't afford it. You know, she had 3 other kids at that time. And it was also a very isolating experience for me because I usually stood like at the threshold of his door, never went into the office. I never felt welcome. He never addressed me by name. And the last time I saw him, I was 7 years old, and one of his secretaries had come in, and we look a lot alike. And so she had mentioned, oh, this must be your daughter. And he says, I don't know who she is.
Wow.
And complete straight face. And it was like a dagger literally going through my heart. And I could just see my mom's face, like, in horror of, out of all the things to say, like, why would you say this knowing that she could hear you?
Yeah.
And that was the last time I saw him. And so that's the last memory that I have of him. And, you know, I've carried my double L's with me, you know, this whole time. But, you know, and I have a lot of people that ask, you know, well, what's the significance of it? And I never really share with them, because as a society, we don't, just as much as I was stigmatized by not being allowed to see him anywhere but his office. I mean, as a society, we don't uphold and we don't, you know, celebrate the kids of, you know, of rapes or of child molestation or of affairs. It's kind of that black veil that you never really talk about, that family secret that you kind of keep buried. But for me, it's evident everywhere I look. I look nothing like my sibling. So I get that a lot too. Well, how come you're not tall or, you know, lighter skinned or longer hair? And so it was, for me as a child, as an 8 year old, it was a constant stigma of, I never really felt like I fit in anywhere. The person that should have been, you know, my biggest advocate, which would have been my father, was probably my worst enemy at that point. And I was always teased at home for being darker or heavier than all my other siblings. I went to a school that was not in my neighborhood. It was in an upscale part of DC, which was predominantly white. So I was teased for being poor or having thrift store clothes. I didn't fit in there. And the neighborhood kids never really accepted me either, because I didn't go to the neighborhood school. I didn't have those kind of established relationships either. So I just felt like at 8 that my whole world in all aspects had completely crumbled. And that was the first time I attempted suicide.
My heart is just sinking. And when you say that, you know, you were an outcast both at home and at school, did you have any friends?
One of the things that I've struggled with my whole life is now as an adult, I realize that I probably was gifted. I had, were they authentic friends? Probably not. Were they friends because I could give them answers or help them get their homework done? Probably. And I felt that because when I wasn't of use to them, then I was pretty much disregarded. So I wouldn't say that I necessarily had friends. And because we didn't live in the neighborhood where I went to school, those opportunities of after school play dates weren't really something that we would be able to take part in. So I didn't have that connectedness as a school community.
You know, there are a lot of parents that also, you know, will say, well, my kid doesn't have any friends. They actually play with animals. I noticed that you also said that you had animals that you were friends with.
For whatever reason, we had, we were the house that always had animals, whether it was the class pet that came home that never went back to school, or we always had stray cats. And I mentioned I had a dog named Founder that actually jumped in my mom's station wagon. So for me, just being able to be with those pets, and they didn't judge me, they didn't really speak. So they didn't really judge me, you know, and for them, you show them attention, they show you attention back. So it was the little bit of peace that I had at that time. And I would crawl under the porch of our VCU row home, and there would be bunches of stray cats, and I would just sit there and pet them, or the dog Founder would crawl under there sometimes with me. And that was just my way to escape.
Wow. I know you did mention that this was the first time that you attempted suicide. Talk a little bit about, you know, how that came to be.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly if there was a precipitating event that spurred it, but yeah. I know I was constantly picked on by my older brother, and it was his indirect way of toughening me up, because I was the only girl at that time in the house with a bunch of boys. So he had a tough love type of approach, and he would like do a lot of like mean things to me and he would always kind of back it up with, well, you know, you got to be ready for the world. The world is tough, which in hindsight, I get, but the approach of it was completely wrong.
Yeah.
And I think finally, after one of those times where he might have, like, he would destroy my Barbie dolls and say that, you know, he didn't want me to be a girly girl. I had to be tough. And I think after one of those instances, I just emotionally broke. And I remember everyone had gone to sleep. And I think I had actually gone to sleep too. And I got up in the middle of the night. And as an 8 year old, you don't really have, I mean, you know, the concept of you want the pain to end. You don't necessarily have, hopefully, the means to be able to do it. And the only thing that I could think of to find was bleach. And I, you know, remember my mother always saying, you don't put this in your mouth because this could kill you or it could hurt you. And that was the only thing that I could think to do. So I remember sitting there in the living room floor with a cup of bleach and just having the smell just be so strong that I could barely take it to my mouth. And I drank it. And luckily enough, I mean, it caused immediate vomiting, which probably saved my life. But even in that moment, it didn't scare me. Like, it's, I still felt a sense of calm of now I can finally, like, be at peace. Maybe, you know, going to heaven would be a place where I could feel accepted. And then when that didn't work, my 8-year-old mind said, well, the next best thing to do would just be to starve myself to death. You need food to eat. And so if you don't eat, then maybe that's my next method of suicide. So I did stop eating for a significant period of time. And I probably went from, I mean, I was a pretty sick 8-year-old to pretty much being emaciated completely. And I didn't actually stop the anorexia, if that's what you want to call it, until I had fallen one day and I could not get up. And I had to literally lay there and scream until someone could come and help me up. I just didn't have the strength anymore.
Did your mom know that you're not eating, that you're starving yourself?
She knew that I was not eating. I would always make excuses and say things like, I don't feel well. So for a while, that worked for a couple of weeks of just not feeling well. Yeah. And then it turned into, well, I don't like the food that you're cooking. So I was always coming up with excuses. But to actually say to her that I was doing it intentionally, the first time she realized that was when I published the Real Talk post 2 weeks ago. And I'm 32 now. So for 27 years, she thought that it was either something, a figment of my imagination, or all of these excuses that I was coming up with. She didn't actually know that it was because I was trying to end my life.
Wow. Wow. Now, did this continue the suicidal attempts into the teenage years as well? Because this time you were 8 years old. Did it continue?
The anorexia continued several times again in middle school and again in high school. I probably went through maybe 3 or 4 episodes of prolonged not eating for 4 to 6 months at a time. Not so much anymore in my adult life, but definitely this. I did attempt suicide again my senior year in high school. And for me, it was I always felt like that maybe the only way that I could get attention was by being kind of over the top and like that perfect ideal child. And it actually ended up backfiring on me because I would take on more than I knew that I could emotionally and spiritually handle. And it wasn't until, I guess that's like December of my senior year, I was on, finally made the basketball varsity team. And that in of itself was a large time commitment that I really couldn't take with my academic load. And I remember, like, I wasn't the best player. I wasn't the worst player, but I wasn't good enough of a player, so to speak, to actually get on the court more than maybe a minute at a time. And I remember sitting there, like, on the bench that night before I attempted suicide, just thinking, why of all the things that I've done, all the struggles I've had, like all the adversity I've overcome, why am I not able to get on the court and play for more than a minute? And usually I'm only able to get on the court and play for a minute if we're losing by a significant amount of points. So it's almost like that 1 minute that I'm on the court is extremely meaningless. Like I have no way of helping them win. And I remember going home and sitting there and looking at my assignment book of all the things that were due the next day, and I just broke. And I remember saying, like, I just can't do this. I can't do this anymore. And at the time, so from 8 to 17, I struggled with cutting. I cut myself probably 2 or 3 times a week. My mom didn't actually know about that until my suicide attempt when I was 17. So I usually would cut in places that I could hide it, or I would make excuses and say that I fell or it was a scab. One of the other things that I did too was I would cut over the same mark, so that way it would kind of explain where that mark came from because it's been there. But I did do a lot of self-harm, even including like over-exercising as well, which would be part of kind of the anorexia. But when I was 17, in December, I took a razor blade and I slit my wrist. And in the process of doing that, I also probably cut myself up to 42 times on my left arm. And then I remember like having a moment of panic, and it wasn't panic that I was going to die. It was panic of, I just felt really sorry for my mom that I had hidden this from her and never given her the ability to really help me. And so I remember thinking, she's going to wake up and I'm going to be dead. And it's going to probably destroy her. Because of course, as a parent, you're going to take it, you're the guilt of it. So I remember thinking to myself, do I run out of the house and just disappear? Like, where do I go to actually die? And the only reason I actually didn't leave the house was because as I was running through the house trying to find somewhere to quote unquote die, I kept falling because I kept slipping on the blood that was coming. And I just finally I just gave up. And I said, it is what it is. Obviously I didn't think it through. And I remember just sitting upstairs in a upstairs closet that had a bunch of boxes and stuff. And just sitting there. And I wasn't upset. I wasn't crying. I wasn't scared. It was probably one of the first times in my life where I just felt like it was a moment of clarity. Like, this is just what you had to do. It's unfortunate that it came to it. But I ended up passing out. And when I woke up, she had found me. And she was, you know, upset. And in that moment, I felt like I just had to tell her the truth. There was no way for me to make any excuse as to why there were all these trails of blood everywhere in the house. And so I just told her, and, you know, she has a way of, she's not the most loving mom in the sense of like embracing and holding you. But in that moment, she just dropped to her knees and she just said, well, what could I have done?
Yeah.
And and you know, that really hurt me, where I felt like she could have done something. I just wasn't, I guess society kind of got to me and told me that I wasn't supposed to ask for help. I was the straight A student who had everything put together, who was supposed to be the valedictorian, who was supposed to never ask for help. And, you know, she took me to the hospital and they asked her if, they told her, you know, that I could go back home. And she, I remember her looking at me and looking at them, and she said, I can't have her back in my house. And I remember in that moment of being like, I can't believe you would say that. Like, I did this because I felt rejected and now you're rejecting me. But, you know, in hindsight, as an adult, she knew it probably wasn't the safest place for me to be at home, because she didn't know how she could best support me. And so I spent 3.5 months in the hospital.
Let me take a break with that one, right? Let's okay. pick up from there, but because this is quite a lot and very enlightening and, you know, eye opening. So I thank you for being authentic and being comfortable, you know, talking about that story. So let me take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Okay, so we just finished taking a quick break, and before break you were talking about how you were taken into the hospital and stayed in the hospital for 3 months, and when it was time for discharge, let's start from there.
So it was interesting transition from the hospital back to high school, because it was my senior year, and the spring is probably one of the most busiest times as far as submitting applications, getting acceptances and things back, and I remember having to figure out what I wanted to do. There was no high school the next year, and, you know, my grades were definitely well enough to be able to go on to college, but I just wasn't really sure what I wanted to do kind of moving forward. And I actually, one of the things I've actually never really shared with anyone is I didn't actually fill out any of my college applications. When I came out of the hospital, I remember just saying, I really didn't care. Like, I really didn't care what happened going forward. All I knew is that I just needed to be able to reset and have a mental break. And my mom actually filled out my college applications for me. And I only applied to 2 schools, and I was able to get accepted into both schools with a full scholarship. And of the 2 schools, I picked the one that was closest to home. And that's kind of how that particular part of my life ended. It was just kind of going on to college, and I went to the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, which is about an hour away from where I lived in Maryland. And so that's where I went for my undergrad. And then in my first year in college, I did have another suicide attempt following one of my best friends getting raped.
She was raped in college?
Well, I was in college. She was not in college. But the guys that did it were 2 guys that I knew. And we had invited them to go to a party. And so she kind of looked at me. She had a car at the time. And so she kind of looked at me and said, well, are you sure you know them? Because if you don't know them, I don't feel comfortable getting them, you know, have them come in the car. And I remember sitting there like assuring her, oh, yeah, I know them. Like, my brother knows them. It's fine. It's fine. And so for me, that guilt of of vouching for them and saying that I knew them, and, you know, having her tell me that she didn't feel comfortable with them in the car if I didn't know them, was just kind of the guilt of the whole situation. And, you know, not to go into too many details, but what ended up kind of happening throughout the night was I ended up leaving her with them because I wanted to go and talk to another guy that I was interested in. And there was something about that moment when I left her that I actually remember stopping and turning back to her and then stopping again, like, okay, should I do this? And then I remember going over to her and I gave her my cell phone at the time. So although she had a car, I was the only one between the two of us that had a cell phone. And I remember, and I walked back over to her and I said, here's my phone, call me if anything happens. And she kind of looked at me weird, like, why would you give me this? And then I just kind of walked away, you know, with the guy that I was interested in. And we ended up leaving the party and kind of hanging out outside. And then for some reason, I kind of had this feeling of like, okay, well, she has my phone, so let me call her. And I remember finding a payphone and calling her, and she wasn't answering. And I'm like, okay, this is a little weird. And then, you know, I waited a few times, but I think I ended up calling her upwards of 10 or 12 times in about a 2-hour span. And I just remember thinking it's really weird that she wouldn't answer the phone. And then afterward, you know, when she ended up coming, she ended up finding me in her car and they weren't with her. And I remember asking her, like, well, what's going on? I don't understand. And, you know, she ended up just, you know, breaking down to me and telling me what happened. And the instant guilt that I just felt, because for me, I felt like there were times along that night where I knew something didn't feel right, but I just kind of kept going with it and just ignored it. And so we've talked about it since then. I think it has definitely, obviously, you know, any situation like that would impact someone's life, but I think it really has impacted her life in a negative way that I'm hopeful that she's been able to kind of work through. And for me, like, kind of having to be the one to be strong for her when I knew I felt guilty was something that was really hard for me to bear. And so I ended up taking a bunch of pills and trying to kill myself the night that it actually happened. And so it was an interesting kind of concept of she's in the hospital for a rape kit and I'm, you know, in the hospital because of a suicide attempt. But
yes. So, you know, one thing that comes to mind as we're talking about this is mental health as a whole for African-American, you know, community. For the parents to understand how mental health affects the children, because then I think part of it is because we don't know much about it and we don't talk about it as anything that, you know, needs to be addressed, that if they respond, you know, differently to anything that you did. You know, like you said, there was something that you said earlier on to say, I did this because I felt rejected. And here you are, you're rejecting me again now that I'm supposed to come home and feeling better, or so that I can feel better when I get home. Because parents usually, you know, I mean, don't know much about how to react to this. So let's go back to that incident when you went to the office at 7-year-old to your father. How much of that rejection do you think made you think about being a perfect ideal child more, even more, or wanting to do better so that your father can even acknowledge you as his child? Do you think that you thought more about that? How did that impact you from looking back now?
I think it impacted me greatly, because even with my mom, my siblings were teenagers when I was born, and they got into a lot of trouble, and I always felt like maybe if I was the perfect child, she would pay attention to me more as well, because she would constantly be kind of consumed with getting them out of school or out of suspensions and things like that, that a lot of that emotional support that I would have needed from her, I didn't get. And then I remember for my father, always hopeful that every birthday that maybe he would actually come to my birthday party, or every Christmas that he might even just send me a card. And I remember also feeling like there was something wrong that I did. Maybe he didn't want to claim me because I wasn't pretty, or I wasn't thin, or I wasn't whatever the adjective is. And so there was, and I think there still is even to this day, this constant thing of me always being aware of what I'm projecting to people. Of, you know, I a lot of times internalize if things go wrong, you know, as opposed to having like an external locus of control of, oh, someone else is the blame. I do take it extremely personal. And so that's been one of the things that has been helpful with the Real Talks, is that now I don't have to keep all these secrets. So now it's, you know, maybe, you know, if I do act a certain way, quote unquote, or if I do kind of have a certain statement, I have that kind of that legacy out there of these are the things I've gone through and this is how it shaped me as a person today. And I think in the Black community in general, and I know my mom has been very upset with the real talk that I have shared, because there are a lot of things that in all families, not even just the African-American thing, that are not supposed to be broadcast to the public, let alone social media. So she feels like a lot of the struggles that I am sharing were something better shared in a therapist's office. Maybe not even shared with her, but shared with a therapist. And so for me, you know, my goal is really to just bring awareness of, I don't want to have that ideal of being that perfect person for everyone, because I'm not. I want to be able to share those scars that I have to be able to explain who I am as a person, so that I don't have to keep, you know, holding up this ideal that's not authentic.
I applaud you. I applaud you. I applaud you. I tell you, because guess what? I am now, you know, a person that actually helps other people heal and also move on with their lives without stress, because I do, you know, counseling, right? So what I did in 2011, I wrote a book. It's called Beyond the Tears, Bruised But Not Broken. And in there, I wrote about my family. I'm originally from Zimbabwe, and my dad is a polygamist. My mother is the first wife, so he married two other wives, possibly three, I'm not quite sure, but I know of two. And that just totally destroyed our family and, you know, the way that we looked at life and everything, right? So what they forget is that with their choices that they make or with the way that they live their lives, for the children, we never get to understand it. And then we grow up to be adults. And then we find out that we still have all these feelings, questions that we have. But because of the culture that says, don't talk about it, and also their fear or they wanted to save face and saying, you know, don't tell the things that are happening, I can't hold that secret for the rest of my life, because then it's holding me back, you see? So, right. Of course, I released a book, you know, just like you're doing on social media. I released a book and my mother went berserk. Why would you tell the world this? You know, in our culture, we don't do this. And I mean, so I released it, put it out there. And because the pressure was so much for me, I decided, okay, I'm going to pull it back, because then I can't even deal with this pressure of you now feeling so vulnerable and so useless, because now the book is out, you see? So what I did was I pulled it out for a few months and then realized that, no, I'm going to be strong for me. This is not about you, Mom. I love you, but this is not about you. This is about me feeling good and releasing everything that can hold me back ever again. Or because then I want to be authentic. I'm not all that in a bag of chips. I have baggage and I'm letting that baggage go. So that book is available on Amazon.com. So I tell you that story to let you know that it's not easy for parents, because they don't know how and they don't understand how this is also releasing them and, you know, making sure that they don't carry that anymore. My mother is the first one now that will hold that book and say, can you buy my daughter's book? This is really good. She's the first one now that will hold that book to you and sell it whenever I'm doing speaking engagements. Mm-hmm. Because now she's at peace with it. So it takes time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes time for them to, you know, to get to that place. And, you know, we love them for doing what they knew. And they can only do what they know. You know, and right. and nothing else. So I also applaud, you know, and make high regards and commendation to your mother for doing the best that she could for you, to support you, because then we couldn't have this Lacey that we have if she hadn't been strong right. enough to be there, right?
Right. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So right now, I know you do Facebook Lives on Facebook. Do you
not so much Facebook Live? I don't do a whole lot of Facebook Lives. My goal eventually, I'm a little camera shy, would be eventually to segue into something that's more Facebook Live. A lot of what I've been doing is just kind of posting, I guess they're called microblogs, so they're, you know, slightly longer posts, so where I'm just sharing some of the things that I've gone through that most people would never even imagine that I've had the experience.
Yeah, how are the people responding, especially to this one here that we were talking about, the 4 or 5?
Yeah, it's been interesting because for the people that knew me in high school when I did have that suicide attempt, a lot of them, I definitely a bunch of support from everyone. I do get a lot of questions of, well, did I know? Like, was there something I could have done? Was there something that I did to push you to that point? And I'm like, at this point, you know, this is 15, 16 years ago, you know, removed. I'm like, of course there wasn't one particular event. It was a collection of things over many years that kind of drove me to that point. So I do have a lot of people that I haven't seen since high school that did reach out to ask specifically, like, did I say something that may have made you feel uncomfortable? So it's really causing a lot of people to reflect on not just how they interacted with me in high school, but also how they're interacting with people in general. I have a lot of friends that are teachers, and a lot of them have come to me and say, you know, your real talks, I needed to read, because this time of year we're so focused on standardized testing and homeworks and grades that we forget that, you know, the kids in our classroom may be struggling with some things. And it doesn't necessarily mean the kids that are having behavioral issues. It could be the child that is the teacher's pet, quote unquote, or the child that's doing well in the class can still be emotionally struggling with things. So it's really been eye-opening. And then I shared a real talk about the abortion that I had. And so having people that, you know, have texted me, they haven't necessarily shared publicly, but having people that have called me or texted me to tell me that they've also had abortions, and there are people that I would have never even, you know, thought that they would have had, you know, gone through an experience like that. And just to have them feel comfortable to open up to me and just share that with me, and to kind of give them that sense of liberation as well, where they can let that stigma go. You know, they can really kind of heal through that pain of, you know, making that decision as well. So it's been really eye-opening. It's also been very interesting who's interacted with my post publicly versus who's kind of shared some of those offline comments with me as well.
Yes.
Directly.
Yes. And you know what? I applaud you for having opened up this discussion of suicide, because, you know, again, I say not only the African-American, you know, or minorities that don't talk about mental health, but I think people in general, it's a taboo topic that people talk about,
right?
You know, having attempted killing themselves. We here at America Out Loud, our radio, you know, station, we lost one of our colleagues who committed suicide. I mean, great presenter, vivacious and just happy. And it just stunned all of us to get the phone call that she had hung herself, you know, one Saturday morning. And we're like, wait a minute, what happened? And, you know, nobody ever knew. So I think whenever we see suicide, I know that's one of the things that we jump on real quick so that we can get to understand and also get to educate people to say, this is what happens. As you say in your post, I'll quote, the real truth is suicide has no look, no GPA, no age, no zip code, no martial status, and no marital status, or it's martial status, and no facial expression. And that's very true. It doesn't have color either, in, you know, no age. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have an age, because then people might think, well, that just only happens to young people. No, it happens to adults as well as young people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It does. So what are the signs, if you were to talk to the parents out there, because now you're a parent yourself, what are some of the signs that they can look for when they, you know, I mean, to make sure that, you know, it's addressed and they take care of their children, just in case they're having emotional problems or breakdowns?
Yeah, and this is some of the things I also share with my tutoring parents as well. I mean, I think it's healthy to have non-parent adult relationships, whether that's with a therapist, a mentor, a tutor, because, and I've experienced this with my son as well as with my tutoring students, as parents, we kind of have this unspoken sense of expectation. And it doesn't necessarily mean that we're telling them that they need to do something, but at the same time, we are an authority figure that they do respect.
Yes.
And so being able to open up about struggles can be very difficult to even the most welcoming parents. So having that non-parent adult relationship, whether it's with a tutor, like I said, or a counselor, or even an aunt or an uncle, can be helpful to get insight that as parents we may never actually get an insight into. And I think also primarily for, and I'm sure this is probably true countrywide, but the pressures that our younger generation is under are pressures that even me as a 32-year-old adult, I can't fully understand.
Yeah.
So being aware and sensitive to the fact that that test that they have tomorrow, or the boy that doesn't like them, or where the girl that posted a picture about them on Facebook, that those things are very real, real struggles that they have that we can't necessarily understand because we didn't have that same experience in high school, but it doesn't mean that it's not relevant. And so dismissing teenagers and children as being dramatic or overthinking it or overanalyzing it sometimes minimizes their sense of self and minimizes their worth, even if it's indirectly. So having those conversations where you allow them to just let them just talk, and it doesn't, and it, you know, as an adult, we can hear, I hear my nieces and nephews who are 16 and 17 say things, and I'm, as an adult, I'm like, that's ridiculous. I don't know why they're even worried about that. But, you know, for them, that's their reality.
Yes, it is.
So I can't take my adult wisdom of having gone through all that pain and healed myself and apply it to a child who hasn't had those same life experiences. So just being open-minded, giving them as many outlets as possible to be able to share how they feel, whether it's written or, you know, with friends or whatever. I think also checking in with their social circle can be helpful as well. I mean, social media, unfortunately, gives us access to lots of different types of people, but being able to still know, like, who their friends are, you know, I need to talk to their parents before you can go to their house. I think that principle needs to definitely come back so that we build a more cohesive network or community of people that if you can't talk to your child about what's going on, maybe somebody in that community that you know can give you some insight, you know, about what they may be struggling with or what they may need more support with.
If we were in church, girl, I would say amen. So with that, I'm going to take another quick break and then we'll come right back. We're talking to Lacey Simmons today.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, I just love the way that, you know, at least I have, not only do I have somebody who has gone through the very real things that I talk about every day, that teenagers are going through, the struggles that they have, and also to encourage and help the parents to be patient with these teenagers and to understand that that world that they are living is real. But I also have a parent in you that also knows and sees that in your own child that is growing up, that there are real things that happen, even at 5-year-old, that, you know, they start getting teased, they start getting to see the differences, you know, if they're of a different race or just even gender, that there's, you know, struggles that they start to struggle with, that parents in general have to take note. I know you also mentioned, oh, me and my shy self. Well, guess what? Everybody that I have interviewed on my radio show, you all are going to be also guests on my live Facebook show. So get ready. We're going to be on Facebook together. And once we do that, I encourage you to, you know, to be able to, and I can also share with you some of the tips that I do, because I do have a TV show as well as a radio show, and I've been doing this for years now. But I think it will be more of an impact if you're sitting there and just talking to them live and they can see your face, because you can't see mm-hmm. them, but they can see your face. People also have mm-hmm. a tendency of putting a face to the voice, and that helps mm-hmm. a lot as well, and you don't even have to worry about how many people are there, because they'll be listening mm-hmm. in, because what you have is very, very important for you know, parents and as well as the young ones to understand that, guess what, no matter how much you're teased or anything, talk to somebody, tell someone, and get help, rather than you trying to take yourself out and take yourself out of that pain. There's help that mm-hmm. you can talk to someone.
Right.
Yeah. For single parents, you know, we have a yeah. lot of single parents out there that are parenting their children by themselves. And part of that is, I know you were raised in a single parent. What advice, when you think about it, that, you know, they can probably, you know, get from your mother's experience and your experience? And I'm also thinking of one of those being, if only mom had known to say, you know what, let me find somebody next door, or, you know, leave one of your brothers taking care of you so that she can go by herself, knowing how the interaction would have gone, I'm sure she would have avoided that with everything being, for you not to be exposed to your dad saying, I don't know who she is.
Right. Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, some cycles tend to repeat themselves, but I'm also a single parent. But I would say one of the things that I'm hopeful to be doing differently than my mom is, I mean, she had a lot of different stressors. There were five of us and, you know, just one of her. So really getting to know each of those kids individually was difficult for her. And yes. I mean, as human beings, we like to categorize people. So I always would get compared personality wise to my sister. Oh, well, you're not as outgoing as XYZ. And I think, or you're not as whatever as the other person. So I think, you know, one of the things that I've been very sensitive of with my son is to not compare him.
Yes.
He doesn't have any siblings, but to not even compare him to other kids in his class or to his cousins, because he is an individual. And I remember as a child always being compared, whether it was physically, personality-wise, athletic-wise, I was always being compared with someone. And that also, I think, impacted my sense of self and my sense of worth and self-esteem. But I would say, you know, for single parents, it's a struggle to balance not just, you know, financially taking care of your family, but also the responsibilities that come with just being an adult, but then also having that time for yourself and being able to make sure that you're emotionally and physically healthy. And so one of the things that I'm hopeful to keep working with, because it's a struggle for me as well, is to make sure that I take that time out for myself to make sure I'm emotionally okay, yeah, so that my emotional pain and my emotional hurt and baggage or whatever else don't affect how I parent my son. And so I'm not perfect. I definitely have instances where I've maybe have said things that I wish I could take back, and I'm hopeful that he's young enough to hopefully forget them. But I would just say for, you know, any single mom or single dad out there, that taking self-care time is probably one of the most important things that you can do, because you can't parent as effectively as you may want to if you're also kind of dealing with some things internally that you continue to suppress. Because as kids, they will push your buttons, and sometimes the reaction you might have may not be 100% appropriate to the action that they took. And a lot of that could be you have that anger, that bitterness, that hurt that you're kind of trying to process. And so taking that time to really work on yourself, I think, you know, is the best advice that I can kind of give. I mean, I've seen how just me taking, even if it's 5 minutes a day, to just check in with myself to see how I'm feeling. And if I'm feeling stressed, be able to identify why I'm feeling stressed and make sure I don't project that onto my son, has been able to just like dramatically transform the interactions that I do have with him. So that they are definitely positive. They're all, you know, in a way that can help him feel welcoming, so he doesn't see mom as being this ball of stress that he can't talk to. So, I mean, that would be kind of my best piece of advice.
Be open to also just have somebody who will be able to help you, to support you, because that's what mm-hmm. we do. We are just there mostly to support you as you go through, you know, the season of being a single parent as well, because then it does have its challenges, especially with boys, because I don't know how much, you know, his dad is involved in his life, or, you know, how connected they are. But I know that the work that I do now, mostly it's not only working with the young ones, but they're coming to me now as young fathers or young mothers struggling mm-hmm. with the fact that how come I wasn't loved, and how come I wasn't good enough, and how mm-hmm. come he or she didn't even write or come to my birthday or do, and now they're there as adults, and I wish we would have had the mothers being supported so that each step of the way they can get that support to be able to say, okay, you know what, I'm going to let this one go, but let me try this, so that you can continuously be there to support yourself as well as your son. So just be mm-hmm. open as you do the search.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let me see which other one here. We talked about the real talk. I just want to go back into another one. Oh, your website, right? I went through your website. Mm-hmm. Wow. You talk mm-hmm. about diversity and how different, you know, we are. So to me, that reminds us of self-esteem, self-confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And is that something that you think should be taught in schools, in the church, everywhere, so that people can become, you know, self-confident? How key is that in our lives?
I would say it's extremely important. For me, because we've become a technology-driven world, I mean, social media can be a powerful platform if we use it in the correct way. And one of the reasons why my friend Adrian and I created the website was I was constantly finding roadblocks, so to speak, with my son being a gifted child of color, and having people say comments like, oh, I would have never known just by looking at him, or, oh, I thought he was your average black boy, or just kind of even the facial expressions, where maybe they don't necessarily verbalize it, but the facial expressions of, yes, he's a brown child with a man bun and an earring. He doesn't look like what we think of as giftedness. And a lot of that is not because of what we've created, but because of what society has kind of portrayed for us.
Yes.
So if he's not Asian or Indian or Caucasian, he automatically, for whatever reason, is written off as not having the ability to be gifted. And I think even the same thing with beauty. We don't think of a child with a cleft lip or a woman with burns on her face or someone that has a large birthmark as being beautiful. That's not what we're seeing in media. That's not what we're seeing on social media. That's not what people are sharing as being beautiful. And one of the things with Beautifully Taboo, other than being 100% authentic and real with yourself, is also embracing those things that you have and being able to redefine it. Of, yes, I have a scar, but you know what? That's beauty. That's strength. And looking at things in a different perspective. And hopefully, you know, if I put my son's image out there enough, that maybe one day in the near future, when someone sees him or sees a child that looks like him, that they will be open-minded enough to say, well, that child can be gifted.
Yeah, I don't even think...
And not letting those things, yeah.
Yeah, I don't even think people understand what gifted means. What does being a gifted child mean for those people that...
Well, usually, yeah. I mean, from the superficial level, giftedness would usually mean high intelligence, is what
yes.
people would normally say. But one of the things that I've learned in this journey with him as being gifted is that a lot of times children that underperform or children that have behavioral issues are actually gifted. And it's just the structure that they're put in creates this sense of boredom and they may lash out. So giftedness doesn't necessarily always mean that they'll get straight A's. And in fact, sometimes giftedness means that they might fail. But it's the way that they're able to see the world, the way they're able to process information, the way they're able to communicate. There are so many different aspects to that sense of giftedness. For America, we define it as lots of money or high or good grades or perfect SAT or ACT scores. But even in those rigid requirements, we still only think of certain types of people as being able to achieve those things. And what my son looks like and what he represents is not, unfortunately, one of those types of people that people normally would quote-unquote label as being gifted.
Thank you for clarifying that, because I know a lot of people yeah. might not understand the difference in, you know, especially when you say that they could be gifted but also fail or even have behavioral problems, mm-hmm. and that could be a sign of their boredom or, you know, mm-hmm. wanting to be heard or seen as different, but, you know, to continue to stimulate their brain and, you know, fill in their time, and that could be mm-hmm. an indication of that. So I applaud you for that. So what are the long-term goals, plans for Beautifully Taboo and the journey where you guys are headed with that?
Yeah, so I mean, we kind of simultaneously want to just broaden the awareness of not judging a book by its cover. We all have those real stories that we can share, that social media should be a platform for you to be authentic. I mean, it's about sharing, but it's not just about sharing the good stuff. It's about sharing the stuff that you may need more support with. So just really opening up all the capabilities that social media really should provide. And we're being the first examples of that. So me sharing my real stories, my friend Adrian will start sharing some of her stories. And we're going to be that example. We're not going to ask our followers to share their stories until we're able to share our own. So that way they can feel that sense of support of us being vulnerable and us supporting them if they want to share some of those things that they've been hiding from the world. But then also one of the other components is giving back. We want to find those stories of people that need help. We want to create that community of support, whether it's financial, emotional, or however it is. And so this past month, we helped to sponsor a young girl in Boston who has been identified as gifted. The school hasn't been able to support her mathematically. And her mom, I believe, is a single parent. She has two kids at home. And her daughter has been asking her to go to this advanced math camp for 2 or 3 years now, which is cost prohibitive for them. She can't afford it. And so we were able to actually raise $800 to help send her to the camp. And so hopefully this summer she'll be able to actually go to the camp and, you know, get that support that she needs. And we recently found out she also has been bullied. And so hopefully, you know, this summer will be an experience for her for you know, several ways for her to mentally get that stimulation she needs, hopefully get that social network she needs as well, to know that, you know, she can do it and she's just as valued as everyone walking around, so that she can, you know, tackle those issues she may be facing in the classroom head on. We also, in July, will be sending water to Flint, Michigan. So it's been 4 years and I think a month to this day where they have not had clean water. And so the past week or so, we have been raising awareness about the importance of water. And for those of us that don't live in an area that has been impacted, we don't realize how important water is, because we can go turn on our water, we can turn on our faucets. But we've been raising awareness, and we've already, you know, generated enough money to buy about 800 gallons of water. And our goal is to send about 1,700 gallons of water to Flint in July. So moving forward, you know, Beautifully Taboo will just find those individual stories, those causes that we can kind of support, and just start to build that online community where everyone can feel welcome.
Oh, wow. That is, you know, really awesome. And again, you're doing those fundraisings on your Facebook page.
Yeah, on the Beautifully Taboo Facebook page.
Beautifully Taboo Facebook page. And I will have all those links for all of you that are listening. I will have all those links, you know, under this show on America Out Loud. So whenever you listen to the show, that scroll down and you see all of her links that you can get in touch with Lacey. And also I will have the website, her website on there as well, that you can read what she has and also give your input to it. Because I can see what her posts will generate a lot of discussion, but also a lot of openness, so that parents can open their eyes and also know what they're looking for and see what impacts their young children. We're not talking about teenagers, but we're also talking about the very young, where it stems from. Because by the time they become teenagers, what you're seeing is a reaction of everything that has happened when they couldn't have a voice, couldn't say anything, and now all of a sudden, as teenagers, they're seeking independence, but in doing so, they also react to what happened to them when they were young and they couldn't voice their opinions or their feelings. So I, you know, want to thank you for sharing, you know, all that today. So as a last word of encouragement, anything that comes to mind as we end our show today?
Yeah, I mean, I would say everybody has a story to share, and, you know, everybody, you know, should be able to tap into their inner self and be 100% authentic. And, you know, believe it or not, everyone wants to read it. I mean, I thought that my real talks would not be perceived very well, but actually it's been able to, like you mentioned, spark amazing dialogue. So I would say, if you have something you feel comfortable sharing that you want to get off your chest, Beautifully Taboo can be the platform that you do it. And we'll be here, you know, encouraging you and supporting you 100% of the way.
Thank you so much, Ms. Simmons. This was very enlightening and very encouraging. So I thank you for your openness once again, but I thank you for your bravery and courage to be able to go on this, you know, forum, the world forum, as we call it, social media, and open up yourself and your heart, because it's not easy. As you do that, you will have a lot of people that will, you know, respond, but then there are a lot that will react and also, you know, yeah, put you on that, well, why are you doing this and why are you opening this up? So for you to have done what you're doing now, it takes a lot of courage, but I thank you, because you're not doing it for you, you're doing it for your son and all those young people out there that, you know, might be struggling with the same things that you struggle with, and also those adults that are struggling with that, you know, secret of having kept the secret for this long. And your message says, no, it's time to let go, it's time for you to be real and to be you and to live your life the way that you want to live it. So, yeah. So thank you for that. And again, I want to thank all of you that have been listening in. You've been listening to the Dr. Stem Show. And as I always say, be encouraged and encouraging.